Actually, we are back to DEFCON, and this time we... After 2 years, we are back to DEFCON, and this year we wanted to talk about something new. Actually, also 2 years ago, we were talking about something new, but... we will talk about asymmetric digital warfare. What is it? What is the point today? What will happen in the future? And we will take a very good example, which is the Department of Defense FCS program, which stands for Future Combat System. Before starting, I want to tell you that you will not get all the information you need out from this speech directly, because the speech comes together with the release of the second episode of our comics. If you go on zoneh.org website, we already published 1 month ago the first sample, actually, of hacker comics ever, which was quite successful, and I suggest you to go there and download it. It's for free, of course. And the second episode, it is complementary to the speech we are going to have today. If you want to understand everything what we are going to talk, and if you want to get even more deep examples, you definitely have to go either to download the comic from our website, or we will distribute later to all of you a CD, which is actually was signed originally also by us. We are the authors of the comic. And this is the PDF file containing the comic book. There will not be any questions and answers section. We don't have the time, but we will ask you a couple of questions. To those who are capable to answer, we will give a nice T-shirt with the cover of our comic book, which is that one. Anyway, my name is Roberto Preatoni. I am the founder of ZoneH.org, which is the last mirror, defacement mirror archive. All of the others, they closed. It's a hell of a job to do it. Maybe one, the next year in DEFCON, I will try to explain to the people what is a mirror archive, the reason of existing of such thing, and the efforts which are behind, but not today. First of all, the credits. I have to give two credits. The first credit goes to the MIT Technology Magazine. I was in vacation the last year. I was reading a very good article on the MIT Technology Magazine. And this article brought to my attention the problem that the American Army had during the second Gulf War. We will see what kind of problems. And the second credit, I want to credit globalsecurity.org. It is a very nice website. You can get any kind of possible information about military system. You can spend years downloading material and watching stuff. Of course, most of the things are traditionally military weapons, but due to the fact that the FCS, Future Combat System, it is a known program under development, you can find also references on globalsecurity.org. Another thing I want to say before starting, it is all the material you will find here and on the slide which you have on your CD, I guess, it's public. We didn't hack anything. So you can get it by yourself. If Johnny Lang is around, can teach you how to use Google in the proper way to download such material and to find it. First of all, there are several good reasons to download Zone H comic. Beside the fact that it is necessary to understand our speech. We have the Dark Tangent, DEFCON's mastermind, himself playing as a guest star in the comic. And the second reason, you can see my ass, basically, which I don't want to tell you it's even better than the first reason, but up to you. Actually, I don't have it so flat. It's a little bit more rounded. My friend here is Fabio Ghioni, and he is one of the person, one of the best experts, in my opinion, in asymmetric warfare. anti-terrorist matter. If you read his CV, is very long. You can get it actually from the DEFCON website. And actually, it's your turn. You can start. We will talk a little bit me, a little bit him.
Now it's a little bit me. So, asymmetric warfare. I don't want to bore anybody with conventional things, but some things must be said before. And there are a lot of things which are misunderstood. For example, the definition of asymmetric warfare and the definition of unconventional. For unconventional, so you understand the rest of the speech, of course. So for unconventional weapons or unconventional means, I give you an example. You have a fork. A fork, you use it to eat, of course, a steak or whatever. Then an unconventional use of this fork is to stick it in the eye of this guy over here. So that's the thing. Then there is another thing, an image, a very good drawing that I saw in a newspaper a few years back, where there was a big Marine soldier and a small, I would say, Iraqi guy, you know, these drawers on newspapers. And the small Iraqi guy said, you know, huge Marine soldier with full of weapons everywhere and millions of dollars of research. And the small Iraqi guy with some sand in his hand, and he threw the sand in the eyes of the big soldier. And he said, ah, that's not fair, that's unconventional. So that's unconventional. And then asymmetric. For asymmetric, there is a thing very interesting. When I was in Cuba about a year ago to see Ramiro Valdés. Ramiro Valdés is one of the heroes of the revolution in Cuba. Hero in Cuba, not everywhere else, of course. And I remember that he said, among other things, he said, Americans, they invented the term asymmetric because they want to invade us, and they say that we are preparing for asymmetric warfare. Actually, they are not, because they don't have even lines, phone lines, to get connection on the internet. But that's one thing. And what does that mean? That it's country. It means that a country that doesn't have the means to combat a war, which is systemic, which is a huge, expensive war, uses whatever it has, unconventional means. That is one of the meanings of asymmetric. The other thing is, for example, Islam and a nation, like, for example, the USA or another nation. So if you have France against Germany, it's symmetric. You have territory, you have people, you have whatever, nation against another nation. If you have Islam, Islam is scattered everywhere. You can have people working in your country. Okay, you can have people everywhere. That's asymmetric. Religious matters and everything like that. So, when it is used, this is, I just basically explained it, so that's when you are invading a country or you are combating an enemy which has means which are too big to be compared to. Like, for example, the United States right now is the only country which can fight a systemic war, which is a war where you have, like, bombs, intelligent bombs, you know, hit the third window on the left on the 20th floor and kill the man who is taking a pee in that moment, but don't kill the cat that is in the room. So that's intelligent bomb. Then if you kill the cat, you say, shit, didn't work, so we didn't spend that much money. And the country where this man is and he's taking a pee and the cat was killed but he didn't have to be killed, etc., etc., they don't have the money to fight this war, so they use whatever they have. Okay, so it's called asymmetric. It's also called dirty war. It's called in many ways. Okay, so, for example, did everybody see the Black Hawk Down movie? So whoever didn't see it, I mean, that's... It's a very famous or very important example of asymmetry in a war, okay, and the use of unconventional means. So you have this big Sikorsky helicopter, which is very expensive, and it costed a lot of money in research and in development. You have soldiers, you have weapons, you have maintenance. I mean, you would never believe how much does it cost to maintain an helicopter. After 100 hours of flight, it must be maintained for a lot of million dollars again. So you have all this thing, and then you had a little boy with, you know, a watch and a cell phone. Actually, it was a satellite phone. And he saw the helicopters coming. He called the guys on the base, and he said, they're coming. And the whole thing went, you know, went like that. The Black Hawk went down, and that battle was lost. So the big expense, the Delta Force, and all the millions of dollars spent, satellite recognition and everything, all was spent for nothing, because this little guy, which, I mean, how much does it cost, this little guy? You only have to feed him something, and a satellite phone, so you have to pay the phone bill, and that's it. And he destroyed everything. This is, you know, I mean, everybody nowadays does the example of the Twin Towers. So you have the 19 men, 19 cutters, and then you have the 11 September thing, okay? All the intelligence expenses that have been done from in the years before didn't prevent this episode like many other episodes. Of course, there are a lot of things that have been prevented, but we will never know what they are. So, why are we saying this? Because in these years, the electronic warfare, the electronic mean, is the best way to hit the countries which are technologically developed. Okay, so we have, for example, all the Western Bloc countries. These countries depend almost totally on digital systems, on telematic system, on electronic systems. So the critical infrastructures, telecommunication infrastructures, food supply, banking system, military systems, even, for example, in the United States, missiles, I think they have IP addresses. So everything depends on electronic and telematic systems. So what do you need to do to hit such a country? You might use electronic means, if you know where to hit, of course, so you need to do some research before, some intelligence. But both the intelligence and the fighting, you do it using a computer like this one. You connect to the network, and if you are good to search or to find things, and you are good also on exploiting them, then you might hit a critical infrastructure and create a blackout. You know that in the past years there have been several blackouts around the Western countries. For example, in Italy, where I come from, there was a huge blackout about 2 years ago where all the country went black, totally. The government said that it was some tree that fell over some type of wire. It was totally impossible explanation. So who will ever know what happened? Nobody. And the same thing happened also in the United States 3 years ago, I think, or a couple of years ago, too, and in other countries. So they said it was Switzerland, you know, in Italy they said it was Switzerland, the tree fell over some kind of wire, and then everything went blacked out. The whole country, it was incredible. I was there at night, I was out, it happened at night actually, I never saw this type of darkness. It was totally scary. So you can hit these critical infrastructures, and the thing is that you can create more damage doing this than doing a lot of other things. So, for example, the bombings that were in London last week, okay, or 2 weeks ago, what did they do? They killed people. Okay, 50 people died. But after these 50 people died, the country, what did it suffer? Okay, there was a human life. Okay, and that's, nobody can contest the fact that it is valuable. But nothing changed. Okay, the structures were totally there. It was psychological, it was mediatic, it was public opinion, it was all these kind of things. So that's what terrorists want to hit at that moment. But if they really wanted to create damage, they didn't have to kill those 50 people. They could just stop a nuclear power reactor or damage it somehow. You don't need to do very sophisticated things to exploit critical infrastructures. You just need to do a little thing that just creates havoc. Okay? So this is the thing. Then I will go on later, and I give the microphone back to this guy.
It might sound strange, but the main difference between the first and the second Gulf War was a bandwidth difference. In the next 10 years, U.S. has developed the way to distribute information, to collect information, and basically, in the second Gulf War, the U.S. troops, they were enjoying 42 times more bandwidth than in the first Gulf War. How this bandwidth was actually used? Well, the picture on the center, it's a typical command center, command and control center, which collects a lot of data, which could be data and voice interception, or data coming from spies deployed on the territory. They are going to be fed actually into the system. From stealth planes, which are actually flying over the territory and watching the situation, taking pictures, spy drones, unmanned vehicles, from satellite, and also from the Blue Force Tracker, which is a very important system for the American Army. It is the system, if you see in the movie, when they are, I don't know, on the enemy territory, and they open the laptop, and the laptop is showing some red triangles on a map, which is, this is the enemy, and some blue triangles, this is us. Actually, this system is not science fiction. It is existing, and they're already using it successfully. Well, I want to tell you one thing. If you open Google Maps, or if you ever use the downloading the trial version, not cracked, of course, of Keyhole, the software which was used by CNN to show you basically the toilet in which the guy was pissing, and beside it was the cat from the satellite. Do you have any idea how many megabytes, gigs, it's actually taking a picture taken from a satellite? Huge amount. Now, if you have a satellite which is taking picture on the territory, on the enemy territory, and you have to download to give this picture to the troops, then you need bandwidth. You can't do the 800 times 600 JPEG picture. This is good for browsing Britney Spears' website, but not to go at war. This is the reason why U.S. Army developed such a large bandwidth network. Was it working? No. When U.S. troops entered into the territory, they started to experience a lot of troubles. Now, focus your attention. Do you remember exactly the day when they started to invade Iraq? The guy was sitting, the CNN guy was sitting on the top of a U.S. tank, which was running 120 kilometers per hour. I don't know it in miles, you can do calculation by yourself. And it was 75. And it was running and running and running, and the journalist was saying, there is nobody, nobody is facing us, we don't see the enemy. And that was the problem, because they were running too fast, and they were losing connectivity. Try to hook yourself into a Wi-Fi network while you are on your car and you are driving fast. You can't. And basically, the Humvees, which were in front of the U.S. troops, they had to stop even for 12 hours to download the tactical data. Now, do you know the difference between strategical and tactical data? Tactical data are the data which are necessary to survive in the next 5 minutes, because it's telling you where the enemy is, from which point you should expect to be attacked, where should you go not to be attacked, what you should do. And because the command and control center is telling you to do this, this, and that. And if you rely on connectivity for having such service, it's good as long as you have connectivity. But if you don't have any more connectivity, what is happening? You don't know where your enemy is, while your enemy knows very well where you are, because you are stopped in the middle of the desert. And how was organized the system for the second Gulf War? Basically, we had two command and control centers. One was located in Qatar. The second was located in Kuwait. And all the data gathered by the probes was actually fed into a system which was producing too much of intelligence. It is like if you enable all of your IDS messaging, or if you are using Zone Alarm and you tell to Zone Alarm to pop up the window each time you are receiving a strange packet. No, it will pop up every 5 seconds. And what it will be the end, that you will switch off the pop-up thing. Too much of information equal no information. And this was a problem. The second problem was that the information was fed into a satellite system. The satellite system was sending through a traditional traditional radio streaming to a vehicle which was located back of the U.S. troops, and from the vehicle which was actually supposed to act as a router to distribute the information. The data were sent using a eye-of-sight microwave beam. I guess for security reason, they didn't want to have the high-technology enemy, which is the Iraqi troops, intercepting the data of the U.S. troops. But this system is working as long as you can see the vehicle which is on your back. But if you're running 75 miles per hour because you don't face the enemy, then you're losing this this link, and you're not capable to get any data. This was the reason why they had to stop and wait 12 hours to get the data. And they were killed, actually. Sorry. U.S. soldiers lost life also due to this, because they didn't have the backup of the intelligence telling them where the enemy is. They were facing the enemy in the same moment they realized it was existing. And at the same time, the bullets, they were flying over their head. Now, the Blue Force Tracking System, it's the system who tells you where the enemy is. Luckily, when they developed it, they assigned a certain amount of bandwidth to the BFT, which is actually working using the satellites. It doesn't work using direct microwave beams. It means you can always receive it, actually the same system you're using on your car for your GPS system. Very similar. Luckily, the amount of bandwidth developed from the very beginning to supply information through the Blue Force Tracking System was more than it was actually needed. So the developers, having such extra bandwidth, they were thinking, what we are going to do? Are we going to use this bandwidth or not? Yes, what do we do? Let's build an email system. You never know, it might come in handy. And actually came in handy, because the whole Iraqi invasion, having the first system not working, was actually organized through emails. USA was at war, in the sense that through the email coming from the Blue Force Tracking System, they were capable to finally coordinate their own action. This was the past. Now, a question for you. To the one who is going to answer to me, I'm going to give a T-shirt. What is this? Can you tell me what is this? Excuse me? What is it? A trigger. No, not a landmine. No. Antenna base. No? No, diesel pump? No. You have it in your kitchen. You have diesel pumps in your kitchen. What are you doing? What? Microwave? Magnetron. Ah. Please, it's a magnetron. And you have it in your microwave oven. And it's a system that can be used, actually, to disrupt direct microwave beams as it was used in the Iraq invasion. We will see later some other example how to use such thing. Anyway, this was the past. And U.S. Army actually didn't want to experience any more such problem. No bandwidth, no connectivity, no tactical data equal death. So they decided to develop a new system, which is called FCS, which stands for Future Combat System. And it is a $21 billion program, but it is going to be upgraded already. It's exactly in the middle of its own development. It's not science fiction. Some prototypes have been already developed. And this is the system which is meant to totally substitute the way the U.S. is doing the war in the future. In which way? We will come to the hacking part later, don't worry. The old war concept was that you should have heavy war equipment, the big Abrams tank, with having massive firepowers. I want to shoot once and I want to kill them all. Large battlefronts, full division deployed on the territory, let's occupy, hit, destroy. Having low-tech infantry, because high-tech infantry cost a lot, and of course having vehicles which were driven by real people. Now, under the FCS program, things are going to be changed. Not anymore heavy war equipment, but light war equipment. Instead of the big Abrams tank, they are going to develop small, lighter tank. More faster than the Abrams one. Having not a massive firepower, but having a minimal firepower. But they are so fast that they can shoot you and then move and shoot you again and then move and shoot again and again and again, like if you are surrounded by a lot of bees. Basically, you don't know. You are going to get hit from a lot of different directions. Instead of a large division of soldiers deployed on the territory, they're going to deploy small families called families of soldiers, typically in 12 people unit. So I put 12 people here, 12 people there, 12 people there. If you know where they are very much vulnerable. You can kill them very easily. But there is a trick. We have a large use of intelligence. What does it mean? It means that I must be capable to supply through the FCS system information, immediate information to the people, to the troops deployed on the battlefield, so that even if they are small families of soldiers, they will be constantly aware about what is going on. And the trick is that when the enemy think that they identified our troops, we are already capable to understand it. We moved the troops somewhere else and we hit the enemy. And then we are going to move them and again and again and again. And finally, having a large use of automatic vehicles. We have some example here, public data from globalsecurity.org. Some of them, especially the one in the box, you already saw the drones, the spy drones, they're already in force. Some other are prototypes. You can see also the size of the vehicle compared to the human being. They are much smaller than what we were used to see a long time ago. And these are the working prototypes of combat drones. In our comic, our heroes, they have to actually get rid of one of these combat drones, which gets hijacked by an enemy's hacker, and it's used against its own troops. Now, always from public data, we can see that this is the timing, the Gantt diagram, basically, on how the FCS is meant to be deployed in the following years, when they developed this in 2001. And one thing you can note, it is that it's saying that the problem, actual problem, is that there is a lack of artificial intelligence. So they are drones, but they have limited capability of understanding the surroundings, which means they can drive around by themselves, but in combat situation, if you have the risk to kill one of your own soldier, better not to take such risk, such vehicles will be taken over by a U.S. Army soldier, and they will be remotely controlled by him, which will actually tell to the drone where to shoot and how to shoot. Now, the question is, from the hacker point of view, to receive the signal, the control signal, it must be hooked to a network, and there is a network, we will see later. If there is a network, it means such thing is permanently connected and authenticated to the network. Good. But it can get, for example, can get stuck into a hole or the wheels can blow up and the whole thing will be stopped in the middle of somewhere. So what if the enemy is going to put its own hands over it? It is dangerous to have a thing which is permanently connected to your network because the enemy can put the hands over the network. So I guess I didn't find any reference, but I expect there are system to protect in such situation, like self-destroying system. Self-destroying, it doesn't mean it's going to be blown up, because it might be dangerous, because it might be close to your own soldiers. Self-destroying means that you will destroy the digital contents of the drones, leaving just basically a piece of hardware. You remember this, the American spy plane which was landing on the Chinese island a few years ago? The American soldiers, before landing on the Chinese island, was a spy plane. Basically, it was connected to the U.S. Army network. They destroyed, not physically, but logically, all the content in the airplane. The Chinese authorities, they were capable to put their hands over a piece of hardware without the software. And you know better than me that if you have the hardware without the software, it's basically a little bit more than nothing. Now, then, if it has really such an auto-destruction system, the smart hacker employed by the enemy might think ways to trigger the system of the self-destruction. Not doing it today, but doing it the day you need it and this thing it is deployed on the battlefield. You are relying on the its usage, but the hacker will actually destroy the content, triggering the self-destruction mechanism. How this thing works? The FCS system, it is managed by a huge network, the largest network after internet, actually, if I think, which is called Mosaic. Mosaic network, it is meant to manage the whole war infrastructure of infrastructures of U.S. Army. Ships, submarines, airplanes, infantry, drones, everything will be connected somehow to this network. The network, the Mosaic network, it is meant to have a kind of quality of service feature based on the importance of the packet. If the packet is coming from the command and control center, this packet has priority in the meshed network, because it is a meshed network. It means even if the network is congestioned, blocked somehow, overloaded, the packets coming from the high priority centers will be routed correctly to the end, having the other packets waiting for that. And in our comic, we cannot say it here, but we can say it on the comic, because the comic is science fiction, we actually imagine the way to exploit such a system, just flooding it by high-priority packets, by replicating them and saturating the network. Now, the FCS system, it is a system, a daring system. They already tried some of the pieces, some of the equipment, and the network, it is TCP IP based, and it's basically using traditional network equipment, and several of the drones are actually Linux-based. A militarized version of Linux, of course, with harder stacks, maybe less holes, you never know. But it's still something which is public, and based on public networking system. And now comes the problem. What I call the Apollo 13 effect. Do you actually know what was the real reason why the Apollo 13 had the problem? You remember that the oxygen tank exploded. If you know the reason, you can get a second t-shirt. Which was the real reason why the oxygen tank of the Apollo 13 exploded? Not communication problems. Wiring? Almost. Excuse me? A short in the oxygen center, but why? Electrical, yes, almost. We are close. No. Well, if nobody is... You? No. Voltage. Voltage. The Apollo 13 project was a huge project. A lot of suppliers Rockwell, Boeing, and so on. They were helping NASA to develop the systems. From Apollo 12 to Apollo 13, the difference it is that they decided to increase the voltage which was used to run the systems of in the Apollo 13. Yeah. So all the developers, all the subcontractors, they were informed, of course, except one, Rockwell. And which is, by the way, one of the subcontractors of the SES system. But anyway, not being informed about this such increase in the voltage, their own, they were supplying the oxygen tank, and it blown up because it was overloaded by voltage. You can get the t-shirt anyway. Now, why it happened? It's actually normal. In my experience, when I work besides on H, I do penetration tests with my own company, and one of the things I notice it is when you have complex systems made up, for example, by different subcontractors, the implementation of such system, it is introducing more vulnerabilities. Rockwell was one of a new vulnerability for the Apollo 13 program. Now, I expect, given the fact that we have FCS being a consortium much bigger than the Apollo 13 one, of company, mostly American companies. The leader of the consortium is Boeing. You can see actually advertising on CNN in these days, not specifically related to the FCS system, but the images they are showing are belonging to the FCS system. So the general public start to be aware about such system. The Apollo 13, the FCS system, it is led by Boeing, having also a large consortium of company to be actually managed as a project manager. We can say actually Boeing is the FCS project manager on behalf of the Department of Defense. Now, how does it work? The U.S. Congress tell to U.S. Army, yes, you have to develop a new system. They assign a budget, and then they name a project leader, Boeing. Then the system are divided in subsystems and in consortium. There is the consortium of companies which are developing robotics, artificial intelligence. Then there is a consortium of companies which is developing unmanned vehicles, another consortium of companies which is developing weaponry, and so on. Each company has to report to Boeing how things are going on. And of course, each consortium itself has a consortium leader. The consortium leader has to act as a sub-project manager to the rest of the companies belonging to the same consortium. Each consortium and each company in the consortium has its own project manager, internal company project manager, who has to lead the activity of the programmers, for example, which are developing within the company a particular piece of the SES system. Now, you can imagine, if you add all the programmers, each programmer developing the system, by the way, FCS system, it is 31 millions of code, the software, 31 millions of lines of code. You can imagine how many conceptual and practical vulnerabilities they might be introduced by people who never developed, for example, such software, because nobody did it before. It is a totally new thing. And when a lot of programmers belonging to a company, which is put together with a lot of other different companies, which are belonging to a consortium, which are put together with several other consortium, are going finally to integrate what they produced, the software, you can imagine the huge amount of shit that can come out. Now, as a personal experience and also analyzing the data coming from Zone H, we have 1 million of cyber crimes, web defacement, okay, let's call it web defacement, filed in our archives. For each, we know how it happened and the reason of the attacks. We can say today most of the hacks which we see every day, 2,500 server hacked per day, this is the amount of data we're receiving as donation.org, 80% of the time the system is hacked through the application layer, and FCS system is mostly application. Now, I want to say they are better than the average. Okay, it will be vulnerable, maybe at 40% on the application level, but still there are possible vulnerabilities to be introduced by the system integration, for example. The protocol might be bugged, transmission protocol might be bugged. The hardware integration might introduce vulnerabilities, and also, of course, information leakage. Hackers are actively looking to get information about the FCS. I met personally a guy in Rome, which was representing US Navy, and he was investigating on leaks. He didn't name to me the FCS system itself. He told me, we are looking for information about hackers coming from the East Europe stealing a piece of information about military software or military programs under development. Well, the only military program under development so far, big, is the FCS system. And no need to name it, actually. It was clear to me that they are having such problem. Already there are spies who are actually using hacker means to get information about this new system. Okay. Now, if there are software problems, that might be software problems, again, read the comic and you will get a very good hint on how to hack the Mosaic network. There are also other problems. First of all, the FCS system, it is organized following the lobbying standard procedure in the American way. So the president got a lot of money for his campaign from Boeing. Therefore, Boeing, for example, I'm just doing some science fiction. Boeing is named as a project leader, but then also other people, they were sustaining the campaign, then they also have to have a little piece. So it is not always distributed as it should be, the work. Lobbyism has a big part in the decision to which company assign a project or not. Then the military software is not open sourced, of course. You know, Linux is the most audited code ever. Still, we are finding vulnerabilities, still. Firefox. Everybody using Firefox because it was open source 2 years ago. Well, you never. I don't know anybody who was actually reading the source, but they were saying, oh, it's open source, so I can use it. It's safe. But still are coming out new vulnerabilities. Because it's open sourced, a closed source platform, basically it is a never audited platform. Because who is going to audit the FCS system? The same people who are developing it. And you know better than me that you can't audit your own job. The job should be outsourced by somebody else. But because it's military, you can't do it. Therefore, I expect, by my experience, to find a lot of vulnerability in the application level and within the lines. Then, if the FCS system is leading your troops on the battlefield, losing somehow connectivity or being hacked leads to a lot of trouble because you don't have anymore a large battlefront which is capable to defend itself. Now you have small families of soldiers, 12 soldiers, dispersed in the territory. They don't get shit from the satellite or information. They don't know where they are. They don't know where the enemy is. They don't get the command from the command and control center. They don't know what to do. They are blind, basically. They are slow because they are without heavy equipment. And they are a very vulnerable target. Now, if I am an enemy of the United States today, definitely I would start a program for collecting as much information as I can about such FCS system. Because nobody can fight against the United States using the same system, because you need a lot of money. There is no symmetric power as an enemy for the United States. The only way you can fight the United States, if the United States is adopting such system, it is to use asymmetric ways. And one of the ways, it is to hack the servers of the companies which today are going to develop such a system and to try to steal information. And what one of the things which we did, we were imagining to be, I don't know, hackers coming from North Korea or hackers coming from Iran, and to see how much of information we could find on the internet to hack the system.
It's not done. So, this is a question I put there, just a little forward to the question. The most vulnerable system, as everybody knows, is our brain, right? So it's the human being. The human being with all its vulnerabilities and its ways to be bought or exploited. So that's why I put this question there. Who are the best security aware managers or people in the world history? The Pharaohs. They got a lot of people to build the pyramids, and then at the end they killed them all. I didn't find any slide with the people being killed afterwards, so I didn't put it, but that's the thing. So, we cannot do it now. So, the right way would be we build a future combat system, and then we kill everybody that build it. Then we wouldn't have anybody to maintain it, but that's not a problem. It's illegal, but what the hell? So, this is just to explode what I was saying before. This slide, I borrowed it from a Swedish study from a university there. That's actually pretty, I liked it very much because it explains all the phases of the conflict. You have the mechanical war at the center, which is, you know, big armies facing each other with the guns and going forward and shooting and everybody falls down. In the end, only one soldier remains and that army won. And there was the old way to fight. Then you have the dirty war, which is terrorism or resistance war, depends from the viewpoint. You know, if you win, it's resistance. If you lose, it's terrorism. And then you have a peace war, which is, you know, the war that was fought between the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc when there was the Soviet Union. And the systemic war, which is the only war, the war that can be fought only by the United States right now, which has the money. It's the big difference between all the other types of war and systemic war is money, and the other wars are people, more money. You know, little windows that you can hit with the intelligent bombs. And then you have the ICT war. ICT war is a type of dirty war which can be fought only by subjects which have the capability or which are linked, which have a high technological situation in their countries, and can be fought only against another country which has the same situation. For example, you cannot fight an ICT war against Iran because they have only two servers, I think. I mean, the last time I checked was a couple of mail servers in the mines and whatever ministry, etc. They don't have anything on the nuclear side, so that's unfortunate for the intelligence people here. And but you can fight an ICT war between, I don't know, I'm just doing fiction, Japan and whatever, Korea. They are not at war, but if they would, they would be the thing. So, if you want to, this is taken from a book which is called Unrestricted Warfare. I think everybody that has some interest in this has read it. It was first translated by the CIA, and then it was retranslated again because there were some points which were not totally clear. And they were the first that unrestricted because hypothesized means any kind of means to fight a war. There are no rules in fighting a war, which means that you can do just about anything. The important thing is the result, to win. Okay? And they were the first to say that one of the best means to fight a war would be through electronic means, exploiting the electronics and the telematics. So, future combat system. This is all the material you will see from here on up to the last slide, which is done by something Accenture. They are all being taken from open source. Nothing has been hacked. Right?
No.
Okay. So, this is the distribution of the consortiums that work on the future combat system. So, if you want to do research from an intelligence point of view, you start from here, You see who is working for whom and on what. And then you get, wow, you get all the companies that work on what project and where they are located. 1, 2, 3, 4 pages. Wow. And then you get, wow, what's that? You get all the, what is this? So this is the specific project that has been assigned, the description of the project, the company, and other little informations about that. And then you have 1, 2, and here you go. So this is all you need, actually, to do what you need to do. If you want to start fighting this future combat system, you have the companies, you have the projects, you have the project managers, the people, the ICs, their email address, their email service, and their phone number. So what else do you want? We have 2 pages of that as an example because we didn't want to make the presentation too long. So you know, of course, that if you have already an email address of a person, you can do a lot of things from remote, because you can use modern Trojan horses technologies or things like that. And I assure you that in the industrial espionage business, which is a business right now, this type of methods and exploiting is being used constantly, and it is very well paid, very well paid. In the other hand, if you don't have the technical capability, you can just send a person with a bag full of money, and you just find out how much one of these people costs. Maybe he's not happy. You know how people are bought in companies. You know, maybe you didn't get your promotion. Maybe your boss was too harsh on you. Maybe, I don't know, your wife left you, and then you are not happy. And then this person comes near to you at the bar and says, you should be, you are better than that. I think you should do, something for a better cause. Here is $10,000. $10,000 is not too much. He said $20,000. Then the end, somebody says, okay, let's do it. So another thing which you can see here is a system like the future combat system. What can exploit it? We said before, you just need to jam it. You don't need to hack it, actually, because hackers are perfect. You know, they want to do things. It's the act of hacking which must be. It's not always the result. You know, you want to do that thing, and then you say, okay, it's easy to do it. I say, the easy thing is for no good shit, you say in America. So I want to do it in a very artistic way. Maybe you take 6 months, but then you never get the result because it's too old by the time you get the result. So you just sometimes need to jam something, the communication, for example. In this case, you have an EMP shock generator, which is an electromagnetic pulse shock generator. It's a bomb, basically. You can rent it for research and discovery or research and development purposes if you can prove you are a researcher, and a lot of people can prove it, for $1,500 a month, and then you have the option to buy it for $11,000 afterwards. So this is public. If you want to buy it, I thought about it, actually, and you put it in the middle of a square somewhere, and then you activate it. You run very fast because you need to get about 3 miles far, and then and everything in 3 miles, it just burns out every circuit, and all the people that are around the bomb, they also get suntanned a little bit. So this I put because, in the company where I work for, there are a lot of consultants which are being paid a lot of money to do things like that. You know, this is the security management learning model, and it's supposed to tell you how to do security in a company or whatever. And from my experience, all the things that we just said and all the things that we saw in the past, I can tell you that this is just, if you work for a company, just don't pay people to do things like that. They're very good if you want to make a big picture, or we say in Italy, if you want to wrap fish, you go and buy fish and you need paper to wrap it, that's the thing. So sorry if there is any big consultant in here, and if you have any questions, we don't have enough time, so just write us an email. Okay?
You can come here. we have the CD with the comic. You can get it. And by the way, it was supposed to be signed by the Dark Tangent, but you know the little Cisco problem he had in the Black Hat was keeping him busy. So basically, he will sign it. Just if you show up yourself with a CD, he will sign it. We'll be happy to sign it. CDs are there. And we have a few keystraps here.